This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
Brandon Thurston from WrestleNomics is up next, and we're going to follow Brandon with John Pollock from Post Wrestling.
Delivering on the returns, increasing our margins.
Ratings go down the toilet if I'm not here.
All I do is simply put the math in my favor.
We agree that Brandon and John do good work.
The reason is simple wrestling economics.
I've been told the Netflix numbers. I've been told the metrics a little bit, probably five different times. I still don't get it.
There were respectable wrestling journalists who needed answers.
Thank you very much, members of the media. I hope you all go to hell.
How about we pop a number right here, right now?
All part of the show, man.
It's all part of the show, and it's all time for the show. I am back. It's John Pollock, Brandon Thurston. Brandon, I got many messages. It really was heartening to hear so many say, please take more weeks off. We love Neil Flanagan and Brandon Thurston.
Our man Neil. How can you not like Neil?
An MVP last week. I think he was on every single one of our shows last week in my absence. But here we are to chat about everything that's going down. Man, how many lawsuits do we have to go through?
We have so many lawsuits.
Today's show. I read quite a few complaints today, including Nick Hogan and Bubba the Love Sponge. The lawsuit that the world has been waiting for. I mean, just think of the content that one Tampa-based radio host is going to get out of all of this. I mean, some unintended promotion for his potentially to be released documentary.
None of it is unintended, according to this complaint.
No. All very coordinated. But that will come later. That pales in comparison. We'll have an update on the Liv Morgan stalker case. Is Dr. Carlin Kolker a public figure? I know that over the last weeks, that is the question that everyone has been going to bed.
I was thinking about this while walking my dog last night.
Is he a public figure? The man who was dubbed a celebrity doctor, is he a public figure? We'll talk about that. We've got Bushiroad financials. I know everyone is just salivating. How are New Japan and Stardom performing? TKO announcing a bunch of, hey, are you a stockholder of TKO? Your dividend news is going to be great today.
Everyone's pay got doubled.
Yeah.
UFC rights got doubled. The shareholders' pay got doubled. Never mind.
Yes. Fighter wages got what? Status quo.
We'll see.
And did the WWE outdraw Taylor Swift? All these and more. Multiple Taylor Swift references actually will come up on the show.
Yes.
Which complaint name drops Taylor Swift as an example to make an argument over?
Yes, happen.
I know Brandon would get that one.
Stay tuned.
But first, we've got breaking news coming out of AEW. Has everyone planned All Out weekend? How am I going to balance WrestlePalooza and All Out, the head-to-head battle? Well, it will not be a head-to-head battle, at least not from the onset of All Out, because we have this announcement from Warner Brothers Discovery that HBO Max, AEW, and Warner Brothers have announced a groundbreaking expansion of their nearly six-year relationship with the launch of AEW pay-per-view events on HBO Max, starting with All Out on Saturday, September 20th at 3 p.m. Eastern, from Scotiabank Arena in Toronto, Canada. HBO Max will stream live pay-per-view events without ads, with all marketing and promotions of AEW pay-per-view events primarily centered on HBO Max. Get the F out, Amazon Prime. Pre-orders for All Out will launch Friday, September 5th, allowing U.S. HBO Max subscribers with supported devices to purchase the event for the exclusive price of $39.99. So several takeaways is... Number one, the fact that All Out is being moved from the evening in Toronto to the afternoon. It will have a 3 p.m. Eastern start. They're also going to be retaining the Saturday tailgate brawl All Out. A mouthful if there ever was one. Couldn't we just call it Brawl Out?
You won't want to call it Brawlout, though. That name is that been trademarked yet? Someone should trademark.
Someone should have. Someone absolutely should have.
And I'll check the USPTO.
Okay, maybe we should grab that one. That will air on 2 p.m. Eastern time on both TNT and HBO Max. So that is basically in place of our 0 hour. And then the pay-per-view will go live at 3. Traditionally, an AEW pay-per-view, you're looking at anywhere from probably conservatively 4 hours to potentially more
than 5.
They'll
still be going head to head.
There will be some crossover. There's no way this pay-per-view is ending by 7 p.m. Eastern time. So there will be crossover and maybe intentional crossover. But that is the state of things. First of all, before we get to the HBO Max element of this, is this the right move for AEW to be making, moving this to the afternoon and avoiding the direct head to head?
AEW pay-per-views should never start in prime time. They're going to go 5-6 hours or whatever it is, including the pre-show. They should, I think maybe I'm 40 now. Okay. They should always start in the afternoon, I think, US Eastern time. And that's better for people, in Europe too, right? Because if you start a show at like what, this is starting at what, 3?
This will be a 8 o'clock Eastern start time in the UK.
Yeah, it's great. Like, you don't have to stay up super late in Europe.
Is this a possible, like, obviously you want to see how this performs, and we are still talking about an event that is happening the same day. You know, there are only so many hours, and I think there are going to be some fans who are, they're going to choose one or the other, even if it's not overriding each other, but holds up relatively well to Forbidden Door numbers, which I still think is going to be tough on this particular day. But these afternoon shows, I mean, I think that it's something that you at least look at the data. And if you can support this, I think these afternoon shows could work, because I do not believe September 20th is going to be the last time that this conflict is going to be met head on between these companies. I think this will be a tactic for future. And maybe you are looking at this, if you're AEW, as an afternoon event that you could potentially look at.
And as a defensive move towards WWE, right? You've got your show that was an AEW pay-per-view that was long and had lots of matches that people like. And by the time 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock rolls around, whatever it is, maybe, you know, the people who are the crossover fans have already got their fill of wrestling. Maybe that actually, it hurts. Maybe it hurts WWE more than it would if they were running directly head to head. We should note, if we haven't already, maybe you already did, this is US only. So for the rest of the world, you don't get, even though HBO Max, I think, is in certain territories other than the US, this is only a pay-per-view offering for the US. The rest of the world still has all the options. US still has all the options if you want to pay $10 extra. I'm told that this is, so it's $39.99. You have to be a subscriber, according to the press release. You have to be a subscriber of HBO Max already, but you do get the $10 discount. And that is, I'm told this is not just pre-order, it's whenever you order it. It's $39.99.
Yeah, it's not like some early bird special where you have to order this. That's something UFC has experimented with, where you get a discount. This was on ESPN, that you could get a discount.
Evolve pay-per-views on WN Live were always like that.
The issue with the UFC ones was it was several weeks out that you would have to order it. And like, there's no guarantee you buy a card that many weeks out that the main event doesn't fall through, that you don't get some of the key fights that you're spending on. Whereas a wrestling show, I mean, barring some significant injury, like, you're pretty much guaranteed the card that they are promoting, or just it's not as, you know, match based that you're making that purchase on. But yes, it will be $39.99. Also included in this, it sounds like all on air promotion will be directing people toward HBO Max. So I imagine like you can still order it on these other services like Amazon Prime, but the promotion is all going
to
be,
you're really opposed to becoming, because you do have to become an HBO Max subscriber.
Mm-hmm. And there
Which
will be
is probably
people that,
like, what's the HBO Max subscription these days?
Asking the wrong person.
It is. Or you're not. You don't get.
We don't get Canada. HBO Max here.
Basic with ads is $9.99 or $100 for the year. Standard, which I'm guessing is like, I don't know what standard is. Standard is $17. Premium is $21. So it is at least $10 to sign up.
So that is, they also added here that earlier in the week, September 17th, TBS and HBO Max will be live from London, Ontario for a special 3-hour show, September to remember, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And then, yes, the Saturday tailgate brawl out, all out event on Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern time. And how about this? This is just for you, Brandon. AEW programming has reached more than 11 million fans so far this year across TBS and TNT, with Dynamite on TBS ranking as Wednesday's number one cable entertainment program among P18 to 49. Collision also ranks among the top five programs in its Saturday time slot among P18 to 49 and males 18 to 49. The April 26th episode of Collision delivered the show's third largest viewers ever, and TBS's Grand Slam Mexico on June 18th had the most watched Dynamite episode among P25 to 54 in nearly a year since July of last year. And
I'll scroll to the bottom. It says
source. Nielsen Live plus 3 days between December 30th, 2024 and July 20th, 2025. Reach based on 6+ minutes of P2+ rankings based on programs with 6+ telecasts.
So explains why we're not seeing a Dynamite do 11 million viewers on any given week. I guess this is the number of unique people from what time period? From the beginning of the year to date who have watched 6 minutes at any point live plus 3 days. Following all that, a lot of people tune in and watch at least a little bit of Dynamite or Collision. I think is Collision included in here?
I love how we have a press release all about HBO Max that cannot disclose anything.
How many people watched on Max? 11 million? Maybe it's 11 million.
Maybe it's 100 million. All right. Well, there you have it. We will see, So this, your day can conceivably start at 2 p.m. on TNT and just continue till God knows what hour that WWE has their ESPN show, of how late that one goes. So it's going to be a long day of wrestling. But I will say a more manageable one for people. I think largely this will be met positively by people that were hoping to watch both shows. And the fact that I'm going to be at this show, I will definitely take the afternoon start time.
So you're going to the show now?
Tentatively, I'm going to the show.
Is this the thing that made the difference?
Which the afternoon? No.
This
no.
The start time.
I was going to be going regardless, but I definitely embrace the afternoon start time over the evening.
Okay. I think they're still going to go head to head. So I think it'll be interesting to see if there's any ESPN simulcast has been hyped in the press releases announcing this ESPN. What are we calling this streaming service? ESPN DTC? ESPN yeah. Unlimited? I think they've been calling it ESPN Unlimited.
They're marketing it as just ESPN, but everyone else right. is just, you know, trying to differentiate from ESPN, the linear network.
Because they're trying to learn from the mistakes of HBO Go and HBO Max and Max and whatever else. There's another one in there, but I forget. So it'll be a Saturday night, right? It's hard to imagine that there won't be college football games on in prime time on both ESPN and ESPN2. So I don't know if there's going to be space. I have looked at the TV schedules and they almost go out. I mean, if you look at, this is not an official website of ESPN's, but if you look at Saturday night on ESPN2 and ESPN, you see college football scoreboard is on at 7. So I don't know. We're right at the edge where this guide is still updating. So maybe we'll get a clearer picture. Maybe there's a college football TV schedule out there I haven't found yet. But unknown if this is going to be a simulcast on ESPN as well as the app.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
At minimum, I mean, you would assume that WWE is going to do their traditional pre-show, and that could air, like that could stream on ESPN. And I would imagine I could see them going even earlier in the afternoon of just getting people on to
start it at 3.
like you could put matches on the pre-show. I mean, there are many ways WWE can now volley back toward AEW here if they so choose.
NXT already is doing a PLE the next week.
That's right. Yes.
So two NXT PLEs on back-to-back Saturdays, maybe.
Or you could just do like the WWE show begins earlier. Like you have a 3-hour pre-show with matches on it. Like they're only going to have like 5 matches on the pay-per-view.
Can you can make AAA and TNA together somehow.
There's many ways WWE could go about this and just try to, like,
will there be something? Will there be something starting or airing from WWE that's new content at 3?
I'd be very surprised if there's not WWE content beginning at 3.
There's a meeting happening right now in Stamford just concocting ideas, right?
Well, let's go back to this past weekend where WWE, they completed their latest European journey with 3 nights in France, beginning with SmackDown and followed by 2 nights at La Défense Arena, which is where Taylor Swift performed multiple times last year. And we got the number for Sunday's Clash in Paris show that was announced on the broadcast as 30,343, which is actually slightly less than the last number that WrestleTix had. So let's take WWE's number as an accurate assessment here. We're talking a difference of like just under 300. Michael Cole calling it the highest gate in the arena's history, topping Taylor Swift last year. Now, Taylor Swift did multiple shows, and I do not believe we have any data for Taylor Swift shows. She is not a pole star.
Asked to, do we have pole star Taylor Swift data? We do not have pole star Taylor
Swift. I remember
Swift
right
data.
From the beginning.
I checked. We do have Taylor Swift cover band data, not as impressive as Taylor Swift data itself. But you know, I know that Taylor Swift didn't price her tickets very high as a sign of good faith to her fans, I guess. So it's entirely plausible that, you know, the ticket prices were such for Taylor Swift that they were much lower than the WWE ticket prices in the same venue with a similar number of sales, maybe. So that could easily be true, I think.
The marketplace is frothy.
Yeah, could you imagine that guy being told, hey, out of the goodness of our heart, let's not overprice tickets. Let's keep them reasonably priced for families.
Taylor Swift is not a publicly traded company yet.
Not yet. So yeah, we didn't get the gate figure, but needless to say, there were probably some exorbitant prices paid. And then coming back Monday for Raw, they announced on the broadcast 23,169 at the same venue. So we're talking about 53,000 people between 2 nights plus Friday in Lyon, France. So maybe per capita, this is Mark Shapiro's new favorite touring spot, France.
Rare to find venues that are of this size, right? That are not stadium level 60,000, but are much larger than 20,000.
Yeah, I saw some people that were, I was looking back at reactions to Taylor Swift running this venue, and there were people surprised because there is a like 80,000 seat stadium that she could have run, but she opted to do this one instead, but it was across multiple nights. So I don't know if there's something in between there, but I think it would take a lot for WWE to graduate. I mean, this place can hold like 45. It's not like WWE sold out this venue on either night, including Clash in Paris. But I think the ticket prices probably played a factor in that as well, because I would think they, you know, at a reasonable price point, I think they easily could have put 45,000 people in here.
Sure.
But we're not interested in reasonable these days. They announced 11 dates for next January, which will lead into the Royal Rumble. So we're going to get multiple live events, which are a very rare occurrence these days, unless they are international. They'll do a SmackDown in Berlin on January 9th. They're going to do a Raw in Germany on the 12th of January, SmackDown in London, returning to the O2 Arena, and then a Raw in Belfast, Northern Ireland. This is being categorized as the road to the Royal Rumble, which is going to take place in Saudi Arabia, although they have not locked in a date yet, or at least announced one publicly for Saudi Arabia. But obviously, you would think that it's going to follow this tour while they are over there, presumably the following weekend of January.
You would think so. You'd think it would be, unless they're going to do more dates here. I mean, that 19th, is January 19th is the latest date there. That's a Monday.
That's a Monday. I mean, you could probably figure wherever that that Friday SmackDown is going to be. You would think that would have to be overseas. And then the Rumble on the Saturday or Sunday would be what I would think.
Yeah,
maybe it leaves a lot of in-between time there for that.
Maybe there will be more dates, unless they're just, I mean, they usually do an international tour in January. That's not when they do international.
No,
right?
No, this is specifically for this Saudi Arabia show. I mean, they never go overseas at this time of the year.
Right. And they've been doing Royal Rumble at the end of January, even it's been in early February. So, maybe there's another, like, there would be like 2 weeks to get to February. I don't know.
TKO made a series of announcements today. The first is that TKO, for all of you fans in Las Vegas, don't worry. They are not going to be leaving the T-Mobile Arena anytime soon. They have extended their exclusive partnership today with the arena, which opened up in 2016. This landmark multi-year partnership will go through 2030, reinforcing the venue's status as the official home for UFC and WWE in Las Vegas. The renewed agreement guarantees a minimum 4 annual UFC events and 2 WWE events at the iconic arena, further cementing Las Vegas as the global epicenter of combat sports and entertainment.
How exclusive is this exclusive deal you think that they have on this venue?
It means AEW and PFL are not going to be running the T-Mobile arena anytime soon.
I think the press release doesn't say that. I did do a control F for AEW. It didn't come up. PFL, nothing comes up either. I don't know. You'd think they would be scared off of doing exclusivity agreements on venues following the MLW lawsuit. But who knows? They've been quite ambitious in being very competitive with their competitors who they don't think about.
Yeah, it also mentions in this press release, of course, that Raw and SmackDown will be at the T-Mobile Arena next April for WrestleMania. So I guess those are your two shows that you're going to get in with WWE next year.
Yes.
TKO has also announced a 100% increase to its quarterly cash dividend. TKO has announced that its board of directors has authorized a significant increase to its quarterly cash dividend program. TKO's Class A common stockholders will now receive their pro rata share of an aggregate distribution of approximately $150 million from TKO Operating Company LLC to its equity holders, representing a 100% increase over the prior program. How much was TKO's birthday present to 80-year-old Vince McMahon with this announcement?
So let's see. As of last count, Vince McMahon has over 6.4 million TKO shares. He has not sold all of his shares, despite what some think. He has not sold all of his shares. He is, other than an Endeavor, of course, or he's supposed to call it WME, which has the majority of TKO shares. And there's banks that have larger portions of TKO than Vince does, but he has a lot. And that, so he will go from getting just $2.5 million every quarter to getting $4.9 million every quarter. So on an annual basis, what is that? That's going from $9.8 million just in dividends to $19.6 million in dividends based on this 76 cent per share dividend. Also, they made sure to note in this press release, too, there is also a stock buyback program that they are still participating in. Great time, according to this press release, to be a TKO shareholder. We've got a quote from Mark Shapiro. On the heels of our – did you read this quote already? Stop me if you did.
No,
on the heels of our UFC and WWE U.S. domestic media rights renewals and the strong earnings and cash flow profile they provide alongside the continued strength and momentum in our underlying business – we are proud to double TKO's TKO's quarterly cash dividend. As I reported several months ago, a lot of employees were unhappy about the compensation, the lack of raises that they were getting, the cuts to certain benefits, that had happened since the closing of the merger in September 2023. You know who gets taken care of the best in especially a publicly traded company is the shareholders. Shareholder value. If you're looking for principles, guiding principles, it's always shareholder value.
A unified platform, more personalization, more customization.
That's what they're all about. Proud to double the dividend. The stock is trading at almost $186. It has not seen a. Well, there was a spike this morning, but it's kind of just petered out. So that's how the stock is performing with this news.
Yes. And I did do the math. So they're saying this is a $150 million quarterly dividend, right? And if you multiply that by four, that gets up to, I did the $600 million. TKO generated well over $4 billion in revenue. I did the math earlier, something like 12% of their revenue by, you know, to think about athletes in other industries who get a certain percentage of the revenue via collective bargaining, who get like 50% of the revenue, NFL players. I think it's like 48%, something like that. So shareholders only getting about 12% of the revenue here.
All right, let's continue, and we'll take a look at ROH's Death Before Dishonor that went down on Friday. Brandon, did you get to catch the show on Friday, which was made available free to everyone after they underwent some technical streaming issues? They just made the decision to put the entire card up on YouTube for everybody to watch and get to see Bandido and Hechicero have a spectacular 36-plus-minute match.
No, but I did look at what the view counts were for the show.
What did we hit?
We've got, I hope it doesn't start playing on me, 190,000 views on just the pay-per-view portion, and they also put out a full show portion, which I'm guessing includes the pre-show. So 190 there, and another 193 for the full show. I'm thinking, you know, I don't know if they do Super Chat revenue while they do this. There's clearly a live chat that was happening that you can go back and scroll through. I wonder, you know, there's what, how many subscribers for Honor Club at this point? I think Tony disclosed once, this is years ago now, 12,000. Mm-hmm. Yes, and it's probably lower now. I almost wonder if it's, considering the reach as well, if it's just better to put at least more Ring of Honor, if not Ring of Honor entirely, on YouTube.
Yeah, there was also, with this technical glitch, they also added on a month of Honor Club for subscribers. Yes. That felt like, hey, you're giving away the show for free. So, I mean, they forked over a lot of revenue on this show of that, quite frankly, they probably could have gotten away with not doing. So, I mean, if you were an Honor Club subscriber, I don't think you could complain about what they ultimately did.
I'm not sure shareholder value is a priority for Ring of Honor.
No, not the same one. But prior to this show, there was the ROH media call that Tony Khan hosted, and he was asked several questions that we'll talk about here. The first one we'll listen to here was right at the end from Kevin Kellum asking about the ROH, the ongoing television situation, and what is it with ROH? Is it going to be Honor Club forever? Are there any deals that we can look forward to?
Of course, there have been at times talks about how to integrate ROH, and it would have to be something that makes sense for everyone. The AEW rights are really, really valuable, and at the level that we operate with AEW, which is one of the top sports media rights deals in the world for TV content that is ranked among the very top shows on cable and is now also simulcast on one of the greatest streaming platforms of all time with the very best content in the world. And in order to have another product in the market that I also control the media rights for, it doesn't need to necessarily be the AEW deal, but for me to do something different, it has to make sense on the scale and for our partners. I am interested in that, and it's something we actively continue to talk about, and we've had offers at times to do ROH TV, but I didn't think they made sense in the big picture. The deal would have to be something that makes sense in the scope of the AEW deal and not be so far off what we do with AEW, if that makes sense.
Does that make sense?
Not specifically. I mean, he's got something in mind there, I guess, but he's not saying what is the sense that has to be made?
I take it that it's got to be something that is not going to upset Warner Brothers Discovery. Yes. That CW obviously was enough that Tony Khan did not want to venture outside of the WBD family when they had kicked the tires on ROH programming. And when you look at that, if that is a restriction, whether self-imposed by Tony Khan or externally, it's going to greatly, like, we have seen largely what WBD's interest is in pro wrestling, and it's been contained to AEW. And with this last deal, it was less wrestling that they wanted out of it. They wanted to expand the Dynamite and Collision onto HBO Max, but without Rampage, without the without the Saturday night specials. So it's, I think there's this craving for more wrestling, especially non-AEW branded wrestling.
I really would like to know, like, to what degree would it matter if Ring of Honor, which is not AEW, ROH Acquisition Company LLC, or whatever their actual corporate entity is, it is apparently owned and controlled by Tony Khan, but, like, if they went to CW, I'm looking, like, you know, CW is, you know, 12.5% of its ownership is WBD itself. So, like, would WBD be mad that Ring of Honor, which is not AEW, but a related company, is doing business with a network that they have a significant portion of ownership with? I'm sure there's more to it. I don't know.
All right, Bushiroad, we'll move on. They reported their year-end financials because
Are we going to talk about IOTC or that later?
Oh, yes. We have to get to this. You know, there was a question asked about Deonna Purrazzo that went, I believe, 16 minutes.
Yeah.
Almost 17 minutes in length.
I blame John Alba. Yeah.
That was the longest answer. But Bill Pritchard from WrestleZone got the shortest answer out of Tony Khan.
I wanted to ask about the union protests that started outside yesterday. I know this seems like a venue issue, but obviously it complicates things because they're kind of encouraging people to boycott AEW and ROW shows. ROH shows. I just wanted to see if you had any feedback on what's going on. And
no, I don't. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks. Yeah.
Priceless. What was so amazing is that, I mean, how many times do we, like, reach out for comment? This was one of the rare times AEW did provide a comment on the record about this situation. And in this situation, Tony wasn't going to touch this one at all. I mean, not even reiterating the statement.
The day before, they'd given a statement saying that this is a dispute between the venue and the union. We have a great relationship with IOTC, and we'll continue to work with them, but it's between them and the venue.
Yeah. Is Scabby making his way to all seven dates?
Scabby the Rat.
Scabby the Rat.
They've announced on Facebook as a new name. Have you seen this?
No.
It's Roger the Rat.
Oh, boy.
To be named
That's a deep
after
cut.
The CEO, named after the CEO of 2300 Arena, Roger Argentiani, I think is how you say it.
Does that limit where Roger the Scab can teleport to various locations that are maybe...
Well, he doesn't have to teleport very far because the IOTC Local 8 office is right across the street from 2300 Arena on South Swanson Street. I should mention, too, Jack Wannon and I will have a report, should be coming out this evening, with follow-up with interviews from Roger Argentiani as well as a representative of IOTC.
Okay, we'll look out for that on postwrestling.com later on tonight. Both Brandon and Jack did great work on this last week, getting comments from all different sides as these protests have continued throughout AEW's residency, which goes into its fourth show tonight in Philadelphia, and then back Saturday with two more dates next week to complete the seven altogether.
Yes.
Now we'll move on to Bushiroad's financials. So their fiscal year ends at the end of June. So for 2024 through 2025, they reported $43 million in revenue for the year. That was down from $45 million in 2024 and down from $47 million in 2023. And Brandon has given us some graphs to follow along here. Of that $43 million in revenue, that translated to $1.2 million in operating profits, which is well down from $3 million the year before. So it really does tell you the margins at which Bushiroad is operating on when it comes to their sports division, which largely contains New Japan Pro Wrestling and Stardom as well.
and keep in mind, New Japan Stardom, which is the sports unit, is a fairly small percentage of the company. I think I have something out here in terms of the this is revenue, I believe. You know, they only had a Japanese version of these slides available. We're looking at information from Bushiroad's investor relations website. They only had a Japanese version of this until this morning. So I spent all this time running the Japanese language through Gemini AI to translate it to English. And then they just dropped something in English this morning. In any case, this is, I believe 6.3 billion yen is what the sports unit consists of out of 188 billion. So a fairly small portion of Bushiroad overall is pro wrestling. But they did acknowledge a few things. They did acknowledge that New Japan's attendance is not great. It says, despite, they sort of published conflicting comments here, but okay, one of these says, despite the announcement of key wrestlers leaving, though they did not name Okada and Ospreay, but attendance has been maintained. But earlier on, it does say, out here, despite the, remain steady. They did say that attendance is somewhere here, despite, okay, maybe I'm confused. Building momentum increase, anyway, I don't know. I thought they wrote somewhere that it, okay. Sales of New Japan Pro Wrestling decreased because of the number of visitors did not increase, which I think is translated Japanese for the attendance did not increase. They do highlight that Stardom had its record attendance of 7,503 fans at Yokohama Arena. And Stardom had key talent leaving too. We get Hiroshi Tanahashi and Aaron Wolf highlighted prominently here. Are you excited for the debut of Aaron Wolf?
Yes. I mean, New Japan is hungry like a wolf for this guy to turn business around. I think that's going to be the story of 2026. Out with the old, in with the new.
Yes.
So, yes. Yeah, no mention here of House of Torture and what damage it's doing to the confines of Bushiroad sports unit here. But, yeah, so very, very simplistic here. New Japan decreased, sales decreased because the number of visitors did not increase.
Yes. Yeah, and that's fans. Definitely true when we looked at the G1 climax attendance, even though that the G1 is after this period ends, right? Because this is June forward.
All right. Sit back, everyone. It's time to get into lawsuit territory, and we're going to start off with Nick Bollea and Terry McCoy, who have filed a lawsuit on behalf of the estate of the late Terry Bollea against Bubba the Love Sponge, real name Todd Clem.
No. His legal name is Bubba the Love Sponge.
Is it?
That's what they say in this lawsuit. Believe that his name has been changed to Bubba the Love Sponge.
Of course it has. So Bubba the Love Sponge, who we will refer to as his legal name, is facing a lawsuit over a yet-to-be-released documentary, and they are suing over copyright infringement, federal trademark infringement, and a breach of contract over a 2012 settlement that they believe Bubba would be in violation of by releasing this documentary. On top of how he's been promoting this documentary, which is, you can't knock the title here. Video Killed the Radio Star, the Untold Story of the Hulk Hogan Sex Tape Scandal. And they are bringing up the fact that, first of all, the actual sex tape has been copyrighted by Hulk Hogan's estate. They have the copyright on this sex tape, okay? So if anyone's going to make money off this sex tape, it's going to be the Hogan estate. And
he wanted to protect it so that nobody else could use
exactly.
it. I suppose
this was copyright to prevent stuff like this happening. That this is not going to be something that can be utilized. And obviously, this documentary was going to be using the Hulk Hogan trademark that again belongs to his estate and clips from the sex tape that would all be in violation of this. Now, the settlement agreement when the sex tape was first published on Gawker led to a lawsuit against Bubba and his then wife, Heather Clem, which resulted in a settlement that's included in the complaint, but is redacted. So we don't know what the exact agreement was in that settlement, other than they are stating this would violate the terms of that settlement from 13 years ago.
Yes, there's lots of Bubba social media posts here. I think you've read this too. Like reading it over, this reads like a defamation lawsuit because they're going through all of the Bubba the Love Sponge talking about rumors of what Hulk Hogan's medical condition is in the months leading up to his death. It's it's really painting a picture of Bubba the Love Sponge as being a sensationalist, of being a rumor monger, of getting possibly private health information that may have broken HIPAA laws. But this is not a defamation case. This is, they are alleging copyright and trademark infringement, which are different things. They're alleging that because of this documentary that's going to come out, which there is a, it has not been released, but there is a trailer that includes a clip of the sex tape, which is the copyrighted work. They're alleging that that's copyright infringement. They're using Hulk Hogan trademarks, they allege, which they allege is a violation. And they allege that Bubba has violated some kind of settlement agreement between Hogan and Bubba. We don't know what the nature of that is because all of that is redacted and sealed. And what I don't think TMZ reported is that this, the Nick Hogan side, which by the way, this is Nick Hogan's lawsuit, as well as somebody named Terry McCoy. Not even Bix was sure who that was, but apparently he's a financial advisor of Hogan historically, who's presumably taking care of Hogan's estate along with Nick. So they have asked the court for an emergency temporary restraining order to prevent this documentary from coming out, which there's all sorts of events coming up. It's supposed to be a premiere. Something's happening on Friday. It's about to be released.
Yeah. Bubba is apparently hyping up the pre-sale and kind of juicing his audience to get the pre-sale numbers up to a certain amount to help the algorithm. I would love to hear Bubba break down the algorithm. And then it's going to be released publicly September 12th. On iTunes, Apple, Amazon Prime, Google Play, Hulu, and Bubba the Love Sponge's YouTube channel. So this is imminent that they're planning to release this, and they're going to be doing a screening on Friday in Tampa with their estimating 350 to 400 people. So, I mean, they would be, in essence, Nick and Terry McCoy would be, you know, wanting this a ruling immediately on this because this screening is supposed to take place and the pre-sale is going to begin.
And this gets in legal territory that I don't want to talk about with any definitive opinion or thought, but it gets into fair use. And can you use the sex tape as fair use? I guess that's what's being litigated. How is the judge supposed to decide whether or not it's fair use without viewing the documentary? Imagine you're the judge in this case, you're forced to watch this documentary. So we'll see what happens. The clock is ticking. And last I looked, whoever the judge is going to be hasn't been assigned yet.
No. Other things mentioned here. Yeah. I mean, they are accusing Bubba of using Hogan's death to promote this documentary. And I mean, they go through just all the different theories that Bubba has made. Now, some of them, I mean, there has been some weight attached to them of the fact that, you know, that there was a complication from his surgery. But then, you know, he's talking about everything is couched as this is my opinion. And you can see him like in the text here. It's almost like he's skirting around these theories to try and avoid, you know, defaming anyone. But this includes suggestions of a cover up that Sky and Nick had something to do with Hogan's death because they stood the most to gain from it. And as well as just a lot of comments that are embedded in this complaint of Bubba on the air stating how he wishes this documentary could be out now because they could capitalize off of Hogan's death while it's such a prominent national news story, but they have to wait for legal clearances. And it's constant here. And granted, this is from the plaintiff's perspective of things, but I mean, they're directly quoting him in all of this of just Bubba's desire to get this documentary out when Hulk Hogan is such a national news story because of the timing of his death, and that they had been working on this doc for years. And it's like, hey, we hit the gold mine here.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been watching Bubba the Love Sponge lately, so I can't speak to my own perspective on the nature of his comments on his show. But
how about other personalities that were name dropped here that Bubba has
Lee
been
Cole
doing?
Was mentioned in an
appearance. Lee Cole.
That Bubba Love Sponge. So Lee Cole is, for people who don't know, the brother of the late Tom Cole, who's a former ring boy who accuses Terry Garvin of misconduct, Mel Phillips of misconduct. So Lee Cole has his YouTube show, and Bubba appeared as a guest. And there's allegations about what Bubba said on his show. briefly mentioned here.
Yes. Yeah, he was also on with Jonathan Coachman and Vince Russo.
Makes his way into this lawsuit too. Yep. All the hits are here.
Based on this complaint, he also gave Russo a copy of this documentary. So in theory, on Vince Russo has seen this.
Yes.
Man, after all these years, Hogan and Russo, back in legal matters.
Can't wait for the depositions for this one.
I mean, this has a dark side of the ring all over it, potentially. If any one of our listeners are in Tampa and want to go to the screening on Friday, please send us a detailed report. We would love to hear how this this
screening goes. If it doesn't get canceled for a temporary restraining order.
I mean, in Bubba's mind, I'd be very curious how he views this. Like, if he feels he has a decent defense, this is great promotion for his documentary, which seems to be his absolute peak of what he is looking for out of all of this, is to sell this documentary. And this is going to be unintentional promotion of the documentary that Hogan's family doesn't want you to see. These things generally help the project and make you curious to want to see it.
I've heard on his show today, he talked about the lawsuit and
of course
walked back a lot of his comments about conspiracies around Hogan's death.
Oh, okay. Well, let's move on to another case. This one involving Liv Morgan's stalker, Sean Chan, who's a resident of Ontario. Of course, this was the individual who obtained a Canadian passport and the very same day flew down to Florida and went right to Liv Morgan, to her residence. Thankfully, she was not there, but Chan is now he's been indicted, facing a count of interstate stalking, and has been ordered to be detained in Florida. That was ruled back in July. He's now secured appropriate housing at a Salvation Army, but basically it's being argued he is a danger to potentially continue to stalk or be a flight risk, or both, and that he should be basically not allowed to go to this Salvation Army, and he should continue to be detained until his trial.
So he's in prison, according to these filings still. His public defender has secured him a bed at a Salvation Army, which sounds like a homeless shelter to me. But the government, who is prosecuting him, came back and opposed this motion to get him out of prison, essentially, saying basically what you just said, that if he's released to the Tampa Salvation Army, he could easily make another visit to GD's home, which is presumably Liv Morgan. Chan has no obvious ties to this country at all because he's Canadian. Instead, his only contacts appear to be in Canada, where he could easily flee to if released. So they're pointing out that there should be concern that if you let him out and go live in the Salvation Army, he's going to figure out a way to get back to Canada, and we won't be able to continue to prosecute this case.
Yeah. Like, if you go through the complaint or you've been following this story, I mean, he finds Liv Morgan's address and gets to her home. Again, she is not there. He starts looking for a spare key to try and get into the home. At one point, he leaves a note with all of his information, and it just seems like this is a guy who thinks he's been speaking to Liv Morgan online, and then grabs this pellet gun that's there on the porch as well. So you get and this is all being recorded on the security footage at her home, and he ends up leaving and then shows up at the performance center several days later for an NXT show, and that's where he's arrested. And I mean,
he's being evaluated to see if he by a psychologist to see if he is competent to potentially stand trial.
It just feels to me like this is continuing to be a growing problem. And maybe that's even like minimizing the best term, but you know, we had these stories of, you know, Rhea Ripley over the weekend just getting swarmed by fans over in France. Of course, you had the extreme case with Sonya Deville a number of years back where someone made it into her home as well. Just the level of convenience that some of these fans have to be able to track down these performers, say nothing of people that are camped out at these airports. It's like, I understand, like, there is a certain public profile that these people have, but this is like, some of this stuff is insanity. And it does make you question of like how far these things are going to be going, where now you are seeing talent that have to have personal security escorting them, such as Roxanne Perez that we saw again over the weekend in France. Like, it is very alarming, and I don't think this is going to be the last type of story of this nature that we're going to be covering.
We just talked about how well TKO is doing, and they're very profitable. Do you think they could afford to provide security to talent who need it?
And perhaps as well, like the travel aspect of things. Like, you go on, like, granted, we're out of the house show era now, but it's like, you were responsible of, like, you get to the town and you complete the loop and you're booking your hotels. And I mean, one of the all time great clips with Bailey, explaining on Fox Sports One about, late at night and having to drive to the next town and the host just being aghast.
That's not
this.
Your CBA.
Yeah, we don't do that in this particular industry. That's maybe that's the personality of Bailey that I would like to see introduced on television. Ann Callis and Dr. Carlin Kolker, our continued focus on this. Is Carlin Kolker a public figure? We got Callis's response to Kolker's opposition, and this was a brief 80-page filing. Peruse some light reading on a Wednesday morning.
A media catalog of Dr. Kolker's articles, his books, and things of that nature.
Yes. So Ann Callis is arguing in this that, well, she's responding about the fact that she shouldn't have had to even state that Carlin Kolker is a public figure. It's obvious. And this is where we get the reference to Taylor Swift by Ann Callis in this, as I will pull up the excerpt from here. But
first,
this argument,
this is logic. If someone like Taylor Swift, undeniably a public figure, were to bring a defamation action that did not include the allegations, what her profession was, or any facts about her background, she could be deemed not a public figure.
Yes. Is Carlin Kolker the Taylor Swift of celebrity doctors?
Maybe of alternative medicine. I don't know.
Okay. What is Ann Callis's argument here about, or at least her argument toward Carlin Kolker being a public figure?
Because if you get to consider Dr. Kolker a public figure, then you have to show, prove that Ann Callis had malice. By the way, what's this all about? Ann Callis is Janelle Grant's lawyer, and Ann Callis said that Dr. Kolker gave Janelle Grant mystery medicines, IV infusions, supplement pills, without telling her what the nature of those supplements and IV infusions were. Dr. Kolker vehemently denies this, has filed this lawsuit against her for defamation using Donald Trump's defamation lawyer. So he's alleging that the medical records, they're both citing the medical records to support their cases. Callis' side shows the medical records and to say that, look at all these medicines that he was giving her. Kolker cites them to say, well, look, she was clearly involved with her treatment. And it will help Kolker if he's considered a private figure and not a public figure, because then he won't have to show actual malice, which means that Ann Callis was reckless about the truth, wanted to hurt him. They wouldn't have to show that if he was a public figure. Does that follow?
Yes.
Yeah.
She's also arguing in this that in the medical records that Carlin Kolker had cited in his opposition, that they are cherry picking 23 pages out of a total of 270 that comprise all the medical records. Basically stating that, you know, there's 247 pages unaccounted for in all of this. And it's like, you're using these 23 pages to support your argument in the opposition.
Yes. So I guess you could look at the medical records and say, well, just because there are records of what medicines or supplements or IVs she was treated with, does that necessarily mean that she was involved with her treatment? I mean, there's a record of what she was given, perhaps, but does that necessarily mean that Janelle Grant knew what she was being given? And does that necessarily mean that Ann Callis therefore didn't tell the truth? And in fact, in Kolker's view, because Ann Callis had access to these medical records when she made the comments, in Kolker's view, Ann Callis should have known that what she was saying was not true, which is not true according to Kolker, of course.
Yes, and they also list here in the exhibits some of the books that Carlin Kolker has put out, including 5 Golden Rules to Eating for Extreme Muscle Size. Have you ever read that one? Get Your Head in the Game by Carlin Kolker, published by Muscle and Fitness. Another one here, Meet Carlin Kolker, the personal health guru behind Kristaps Porzingis, published by Vice in January of 2018. Another exhibit, Unlocking the Secrets of a Celebrity Body with Bieber's Dietary Guru, published by MTV News in August of 2016. Piven's Doc, If You See Him Eating Seafood, Call My Office, published by ABC in December of 2008. And it goes on here of different various publications that have covered Dr. Carlin Kolker in their argument that he should be constituted as a public figure. No mention of a Bigger, Faster, Stronger that he does make brief appearance in.
Yeah. I mean, like a classic public figure, which they're trying to point out, is Taylor Swift, right? Or whoever the president of the United States is at any given moment. As I said last week, I didn't know who Dr. Carlin Kolker was before these lawsuits became something that we were covering. He might be a limited purpose public figure. I don't think that that's going to be decided probably at this motion to dismiss stage anyway. Which means it would get beyond that unless the judge just believes that there's no way that Ann Callis could have been lying, when she, you know, made her statements about Janelle Grant's experience, with Dr. Kolker while having the medical records that are related to that experience.
All right. Before we wrap up the show, we have a few more topics to get to, but we're just going to take a quick commercial break.
WWE on Netflix is truly the best thing ever. But there's one catch. Not everybody gets that. A lot of you are still watching WWE the old school way, on cable, dealing with boring commercials while I'm enjoying uninterrupted action. Let's fix that with today's sponsor, Surfshark VPN.
Thank you, Stephanie. Surfshark VPN, who's getting just unlimited free promotion from all wrestling podcasts this past week. I've never heard of this VPN service, but I am sure NBC Universal and ESPN have now heard of this VPN ad. What are the odds we're going to hear this ad again on What's Your Story with Steph McMahon?
We'll see. How do you think ESPN feels about that?
I'd be pissed if I was spending all these billions as I'm trying to maintain my cable presence. I'd be pretty upset if I was NBC Universal or ESPN.
We didn't discuss in our discussion about the battle of September 20th that's coming up. This is kind of a day where, more than at any point previously in the United States anyway, this is kind of two pay-per-views going head-to-head, considering, I mean, almost, a little less than half of the pay TV universe will have access to this, I think. But the majority of the United States will not have access to ESPN Unlimited. So they will have to pay $30 if they want to watch WrestlePalooza. Or they could pay four, they can do both. They could also pay $40 on HBO Max to watch All Out. Because this is a new experience for W fans who haven't been watching wrestling before 2014.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting aspect to this that we haven't focused on is that, you know, throwing out one, like if you're a YouTube TV subscriber, and
which I am,
like you are not getting this ESPN streaming service with.
Well, you know what I'm going to do? If I'm going to actually watch WrestlePalooza, I'm turning on NordVPN, which I got through nordvpn.com/postwrestling, and I'm going to turn on Netflix.
Well, that's what I think a lot of people, like, it's not just the idea of, you know, convincing someone to buy a regular pay-per-view. It's the mentality that I'm already paying for this and I just chose the wrong carrier that's going to cost me $30.
Or you just live in an area where you can't get the right carrier.
That's it. So it's like I'm getting bilked for something that is, it's just I'm on the wrong carrier system, and I don't know if too many people are going to be switching carriers just for this ability. But
you could cancel your cable and sign up for Fubo, which I think does have access to this.
You could, but are enough people going to be doing that for a wrestling pay-per-view. Some might, like, if you're watching every pay-per-view every month and you're not getting the ESPN Unlimited, like, yeah, maybe you're going to make, or if you're an NFL fan and you want to get the games on streaming. Yes, but.
And she couched this as a way to avoid watching the commercials for all W programming. She didn't necessarily couch it as a way to avoid having to pay for ESPN Unlimited.
Not just commercials, boring commercials.
Boring commercials.
Do you remember the other Unlimited? Before there was ESPN Unlimited, do you remember WWE Unlimited? This was a concept in 2005 when WWE moved back to the USA Network, and they introduced this
idea. Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
That was
this
great.
This was their pitch was... It would essentially be like what you get now on Netflix, where they would air through the commercial breaks, but on WWE.com. So yes. What they would do is they would actively send you away from the USA Network during the commercials
to your computer.
The website. And this lasted like 2 or 3 weeks before USA Network put the kibosh on this.
There's no commentary. I really liked it because it was a way to watch WWE without commentary for a few minutes.
Yeah. So, I mean, they would shoot things during the commercials. Like they tried to incentivize you to go to the website, but therefore ignoring, the boring commercials that Stephanie was, you know, bogged down by watching on USA Network. So, I mean, that was the attitude of USA Network in 2005. I don't think this is a massive deal. It was just kind of, it was just hilarious to hear somebody in WWE that, I mean, they have these multiple billion-dollar deals with entities that are very much trying to keep cable preserved while also...
CW or CW, just the same as ESPN, you're promoting a way to circumvent your most valuable business partnerships.
I mean, this is, you know, don't buy the pay-per-view. It'll probably be on a torrent site the next morning. Like, we're not that many, you know, degrees of separation from that argument here from Stephanie McMahon.
I'll raise it because I know it's being discussed. Is this revenge for ESPN's haphazard rollout of ESPN Unlimited?
Of not having all of their carriers in a row?
All the carriers aren't there. The messaging is a little confusing. We don't know whether to call it ESPN DTC or ESPN Unlimited. Do I already have access to this or not?
Well, let me ask you this. Because when the ESPN deal was first announced, we were all of the assumption that they were going to run till March with Peacock, and then you'd have WrestleMania to have the official ESPN launch. Now they're moving it up to September 20th. You're going up against AEW. I mean, is this the ideal time for WWE to be launching on ESPN versus next year when you would have the biggest event of the year? And by the end of this entire football season, how many more carriers might be offering this, at least for the first several months, that this would have maybe been a more clean launch? Because I guarantee you, on September 20th, there's going to be a lot of wrestling fans that are not going into the weeds about whether they get this ESPN Unlimited or not.
Right.
And there's going to be a lot of confusion that day, which is not going to be the case for AEW. It's going to be just a typical pay-per-view purchase like you always do with the addition of HBO Max. And there's absolutely going to be confusion for, like, how do you even explain this if you're on WWE programming? Do you think they're going to go carrier by carrier of who gets this, who doesn't? They're just going to be promoting this is on ESPN. Go sign up for ESPN.
I have a pie chart that they can use.
Maybe it's time that they give you a stern warning that you're an idiot if you're not on, name me a carrier that is offering this.
Spectrum TV. Has it. Spectrum has it. DirecTV streaming. See, DirecTV streaming subscribers only, not the traditional satellite customers, I think.
Oh, that's going to be a mouthful for Michael Cole.
Yeah. Just figure it out. See if you can log in. If you can't, pay $30. Well, it'll be,
there's going to be growing pains is all I'm saying. And like that day, not to mention the fact that there is going to be a lot of, you know, they are going to be putting a lot of, demand on this live stream on September 20th. It's like, maybe this goes without a hitch, but you can certainly foresee that there is going to be some level of confusion that day for people and for these first several months while this is being rolled out. And it's, for some, like, that's going to be a tough $30 to spend when they know that alternate carriers, you could get it, you just get it with your service.
And, like, clearly they wanted this to coincide with the rollout of this service 1 month after it had launched. I imagine ESPN just decided that, you know, I mean, wrestling, WWE is a really strong product to have if you're launching a streaming service, whether that was the W Network or Peacock. And that should help them, right? But it's also going to be the trade-off of WWE, which has enjoyed a really big reach relative to prior history for its pay-per-views. All of a sudden, that's going to go in the other direction, because I'm sure this is going to be, it's probably going to be the least watched WWE PLE in quite some time.
We didn't mention on the Clash in Paris show, they did give a on-screen thank you to Peacock and specifically Rick Cordella for helping out WWE, and Cordella did respond and said thank you for taking a chance on Peacock 5 years ago.
Yes. Have you ever thanked Bonnie Hammer on air?
I don't think Bonnie Hammer has ever. Maybe she's been mentioned in passing at some point. Very, very important person at USA Network for WWE, especially in 2005. But yes, there we have it. The streaming battles continue.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we're going back to November of 1995 as Rewind Away takes a look at the Survivor Series featuring Diesel defending the WWF Championship against Bret Hart. We'll also have weekly editions of Collision Course with the Carousel of Co-Hosts joining Kate from Montreal, reviews of TNA Victory Road, New Japan's Destruction in Kobe, and it is the Ask Away Mailbag Show as John and Way answer your questions all this month at postwrestlingcafe.com.
Okay, well, Brandon, I wanted to place this near the end. This is your story to convey to us. It says here, petitioning the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority for records related to WrestleMania in Las Vegas. What can you share about this? You've told me some of these details.
So the Las Vegas Convention and Visitors Authority is the local government entity in Las Vegas that has helped attract WrestleMania to Las Vegas, this year. Presumably next year too. We did get some records from the LVCVA, last year ahead of WrestleMania, which told us some information about how Las Vegas ended up getting WrestleMania. Remember, people thought it was going to go to Minnesota. It looks like it almost did, but then went to Las Vegas instead. This year, I mean, maybe there's something to learn about why it was originally announced to be going to New Orleans, next year, and it's going to go to Las Vegas as announced later. So on and so forth. So I made a records request actually just after WrestleMania happened, before the New Orleans, was canceled essentially as a WrestleMania location for next year. I made a records request right after WrestleMania, to get whatever information we could to learn about what the business dealings were like between this government entity and WWE, maybe any attendance information, and anything we can learn about how WWE interacted with this government entity. And states across the country have public records laws, including Nevada. And, this request was made on April 23rd. And periodically they've been sending me letters, which are pretty generic and boilerplate, that have said the same thing each time, saying we need more time to search. They sent me a fifth one, a couple weeks ago. So I have filed a petition to try to get the court to force them to, give the records that have been requested, the non-exempt records that have been requested by me. So they've been served on Friday, and we'll see what happens. And hopefully we'll get some help from the 8th Judicial District in Clark County. And we'll learn more about what WWE's dealings were with the LVCVA.
Are you going to be picketing outside of any offices in Las Vegas? Do you need a giant-sized rat?
No. All I needed was a petition. I filed the petition. It's like a 6 or 7 page petition, explaining why, they are not following the law. They have delayed, and they're supposed to give a reason. The law states that the government agency, if they're not going to, provide the records within 5 days, they have to set a date where at the earliest time at which they will, release those records. And if they miss that, they have to provide a reason why they've missed that date. And they haven't provided a substantive reason. All they have said is to explain why they need more time to search is essentially to say, we need more time to search. So that's, I argue, a violation of the Nevada Public Records Act.
I mean, that's what these entities are supposed to be fulfilling these requests. So don't F with Brandon Thurston. Okay. That's your takeaway from this. All media inquiries can be sent my way. Okay. I'll be your spokesperson throughout this ordeal. Finally, ratings news from the last couple of days. Let's go back to Raw from a week ago on August 25th. They did 2.6 million views, 5 million hours viewed, ranking sixth globally and in the top 10 in 14 different countries, including all the way up to number five in the US, seventh in Canada, and ranking in other places such as India, UK, Mexico, Saudi Arabia, and Singapore. So fine numbers overall for Raw. Do you want to break this down?
Yeah. Are you sure?
SmackDown on Friday, tape delayed show from Lyon, France. This did feature John Cena appearing on the show with Logan Paul, fell to 1,147,000 viewers. That was down 9%. And if you take out the FS1 episodes of SmackDown during the Fox era, this would be the lowest viewership in SmackDown's history. The demo was down 20%, registering a 0.28, which was still second for the night on cable and third on all of television behind two college football games. So
speaking of all-time lows in college football, I don't know if you've seen your inbox, the collision ratings, the Saturday ratings.
I've got them here.
And 100, we don't have any reports ready, but we do have the programming insider information. 195,000 viewers for collision. This is Saturday at 8. This is not a preemption.
No.
And live show. You say your turn. You say the demo.
A 0.04 in the 18-49 demo. That my analysis, not good.
So this is the lowest 18-49 since February 1st, according to my spreadsheet, where they were not in preemption, or were they in preemption? I'm scrolling over to look. They were not in preemption that night, and they did a 0.04, so the same rating as this, but this is the lowest total viewership ever, at least for a non-preemption.
So do not strike people as a must-see show for the collision from Philadelphia on Saturday. I mean, they were up against a ton of college football that pretty much dominated everything. You had ESPN games, FS1 games, Catch of the Day, a Hallmark movie. I don't know how much that took a chunk out of a collision.
We got a Big Bang Theory rerun
college football
on Nick at Night.
Might be. Yeah, but could be a prelude of what is to come this college football season for Saturday nights. And this might, I mean, if this becomes kind of your baseline numbers this season, I mean, it is going to revisit the thought of collision as this Saturday night vehicle for TNT. But at least for this week, that's a pretty bad number for a live edition of Collision. Crush. All right, let's do a super chat. Jake from the Windy City, do either of you have any sympathy for AEW and Tony Khan with WWE's counter-program attempts to play devil's advocate? If you keep poking the bear, you can't feel upset when the smack gets laid down on you. Is he talking about like AEW being the bear that is poked, or vice versa?
I'm guessing he means that with Tony Khan sometimes tweeting, you know, provocative things and saying,
which is definitely something he has
not happened this year,
pretty much eliminated from his repertoire. I wouldn't say there's like necessarily sympathy. I mean, this is a wrestling war, but I think generally, I think the public sentiment is that this is a tactic that is being precipitated by one side. I don't think AEW is courting this, but I mean, that is the WWE playbook, and you can not necessarily have to feel bad for AEW, but they are being placed in the defensive posture to have to react rather than they being the ones that are engaging in this and counter programming the other way around. But like, that's what's happening here. So you have to make those decisions. And I'm sure for AEW, they look at, okay, there is like for All In Texas, the decision was made like, listen, this is our big show. Are we going to move to the afternoon for the betterment of our business? Or are we going to, you know, not back down from this head to head challenge? And they made, I think, the best business decision, as I feel they are here, to move this to the afternoon. But I think ultimately it's like, I guess, what is at your disposal if you are AEW to retaliate in such a way?
They reschedule your show to 3 o'clock.
Well, yeah, like that's like, is that viewed as a win for WWE by them moving? I don't know if it is. It's,
I don't think it should be, because I think that is the right thing for them to do. Even if there was no AEW show, or if there was no W show, I think that is the better thing for them to do for the sake of the length of their shows and for the sake of international viewers, on the Eastern Hemisphere. I don't know that I have sympathy for Tony Khan and being, you know, having to compete hard with WWE, but I think it is an opportunity for him, for AEW to further differentiate itself, and to present itself as an underdog that's going up against a much larger, more powerful company, with various media partners. And I think there's that aspect put together with what we're just talking about, the consumer friction that WWE is asking their fans for, especially the United States, where they're not just on Netflix, but they're on Netflix, they're on NBC Universal, they're on CW, they're on ESPN, they're on Tubi, they're on all these different media platforms, that you may have to subscribe to that you're not already subscribed to. There's that complication, along with, now attendances are still really good for WWE. They did great in Paris, but those ticket prices, I understand there was a chant during Clash at Paris that if you translate it from French, means we have no more money, because the ticket prices were so high. AEW with its relative ticket demand, I'm sure is charging considerably lower ticket prices. It's an opportunity to differentiate yourself as a more fan friendly product. We're in one place. All you got to do is either subscribe to cable or subscribe to HBO Max, and you can watch all the AEW content that there is, whereas the other guys are asking a lot more of you in terms of how you engage with media and in terms of what they're asking you to pay for ticket prices.
This is what it is. I mean, it's an eat what you kill world.
Couldn't have said it better myself. All right, that's going to bring an end to the show. Thanks for the super chat, Jake, and for all of you for tuning in. We are going to sign off. I am back tonight with Wei Ting. We will be live after Dynamite at the 2300 Arena, and you can look out for Jack Wannon and Brandon Thurston's follow-up report on the IATSE local number 8 versus 2300 Arena, and maybe a quote or two from Roger the Rabbit. Roger the Rat.
No, we did not interview him.
No? Okay.
No, we did not interview
him. Look out for that, postwrestling.com, and Brandon has always got reports coming, including a big breakdown of this collision number, which we'll be dropping at patreon.com/WrestleNomics and WrestleNomics.substack.com. Anything else you want to throw out there, Brandon?
Just the usual.
You have stats for July and August that are
July
up?
July and August live event market comparisons, which are now a little bit complicated by the fact that they're doing residencies, that is AEW is. But we also have the market comparisons for all of AEW's events, as well as all of WWE's events for July and August, and the averages. This is all based on WrestleTix data, and the averages by event type: Collision, Dynamite, Raw, and SmackDown. And as always, there's always the data reports for each and every episode of Raw, SmackDown, NXT, Dynamite, Collision. Every new episode, there's a new report with not just TV ratings, but attendance information, as well as YouTube information.
All right. And as well, it is a open house week at Post Wrestling this week. So if you would like to catch the entire live XL edition of Rewind to Dynamite tonight, you just have to sign up to the free tier at postwrestlingcafe.com. That will also give you access to Thursday's Rewind Away, where we are covering the 1993 Survivor Series starring Bruce Hart. So that is going to be dropping on Thursday for everybody to check out. We will speak with you next Wednesday. We're here every week, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, Wednesdays at WrestleNomics and Post Wrestling, and we'll speak with you next week.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.